Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
There seems to be some kind of, I wouldn't call it a consensus, but at least a question rolling around in the media about the political leanings of Pope Francis based upon a recent document that he released, Evangelii Gaudium. Well, Rush Limbaugh says it's pure Marxism, and others in the media have been asking the question, is Pope Francis a communist, including the BBC? We're going to take up that question, examine both the question and its answer for the next few minutes of Issues Etc. Dr. James Hitchcock is our guest. He's Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Always glad to be here.
Would this question even be asked, or would it be so easily posed if we didn't have the historic backdrop of the long papacy of John Paul II, who was, among other things, known for being staunchly anti-communist?
No, I don't think it would be asked if it weren't for that. But on the other hand, everyone has always assumed over the years that the Catholic Church is very anti-communist, certainly going back to the period of the Cold War and the 1950s and the Iron Curtain and all that. What I think is different today, though, is that Pope Francis, coming from Argentina, is kind of outside what we thought of as the traditional East-West division. The southern hemisphere had a somewhat different view of it. The key to understanding his economics, and I don't claim I do, is Juan Perón, the longtime dictator of Argentina, who succeeded in creating a different kind of social and economic atmosphere, which doesn't seem to fit very well into our category of left and right. And I think that's confusing to a lot of people, including me.
So, in other words, you're saying his native politics, if we can say that of a pope, his native politics is not so easily categorized.
That's correct. On one level, I think it's also true that Pope Francis, you might say, is a very simple man. That is, he responds quickly and rather emotionally to situations, and so he confronts poverty, and instead of having elaborate theories maybe about how it should be dealt with, he says, we've got to do something. And he will speak harshly of those whom he thinks are not doing enough or who may be even contributing to the problem. And I think he's not as intellectual as his two predecessors were. And he doesn't perhaps think things out in the most careful way.
Well, one of the documents that's being cited by many in the media, both popular media and more serious media, is an encyclical from him that was recent, Evangelii Gaudium. What is this document, and why are people finding reason to question the Pope's politics from it?
Well, he's very critical of capitalism as an economic system. He's very critical of private property, while at the same time making it clear that he's not condemning private property. Again, if people have more familiarity with the Catholic social tradition, this is not quite as new as you could might think. The key here is Pope Leo XIII in 1891, who kind of lays down these basic principles. On the one hand, we support the institution of private property. We're against socialism. We're against communism. On the other hand, private property is not just your property. You can't do with it anything you want. You have social obligations that you have to live up to. If necessary, maybe the government should step in and see to it that you meet your obligations. So that's really part of the whole Catholic economic, at the heart of the whole Catholic economic tradition. And Francis is now, you might say, articulating that in a somewhat different way.
There's also the anticipation of his forthcoming encyclical on that is supposed to deal in part with the environment.
Right.
What do we expect there?
Well, it sounds like there's been a leaked copy. Now, whether that turns out to be accurate, it sounds like he's going to take a very strong position that there's a worldwide environmental crisis. The human beings are primarily responsible for it. And then behind that, he would say irresponsible economic systems are responsible for it, talking, of course, about such things as air pollution and so on. It sounds like that he has sided with what we might consider to be the more ardent environmentalists. That is, it doesn't sound like from a leaked copy that this is, well, on the one hand, on the other hand, he's coming down strongly on one side. He sees this as an international emergency. Where I think there's a problem is that the worldwide environmentalist movement, you don't look at them very long before they start emphasizing population control. Human beings are the cause of all this. We've got to curtail human breeding, which is going to run up against the Catholic opposition to birth control and abortion. There has already been a little bit of tension over that, so it'll be very interesting to see how that develops.
Now, I seem to remember maybe 6 months ago he made some kind of offhand statement, which he is wont to do. Most of his statements appear to be offhand statements about, I don't think it was over birth control as much, it was over a human population with respect to how many children.
Yeah, he said we don't have to be breeding like rabbits. Yes. Now, he backtracked on that. I think he apparently then said the day or so later, oh, I'm sorry, I don't know, I offended some people with large families. I'm very sorry I did that, said that. As you say, he does have a tendency to sometimes to speak first and think about it later. I don't think there's any question that he himself, and he's articulated that several times since, strongly supports Catholic teaching. Now, to say the Pope supports Catholic teaching is kind of a joke, about things like abortion and birth control. But as it so often happens, too, a quick response like that catches the headlines, and then what he may say later in a more nuanced way doesn't attract as much attention. So that's one of the problems, too.
But I take it you would be truly shocked if he were to, in the course of dealing with climate change and things like that, deviate in any way from Catholic moral teaching on population.
Well, exactly. I mean, Catholic teaching, in a way, says, well, he couldn't do that. Now, you know, there's been a certain amount of debate. It's as a theoretical matter. Can there be a pope who's a heretic? And people pick out one or two obscure incidents in history and say, well, this pope might have been a heretic, etc. But the general belief is the pope is guided by the Holy Spirit, and he could never. He might make factual mistakes. You know, maybe he's wrong about the climate crisis and what's causing it. He could be wrong about that, but he can't be wrong about basic moral principles, including one that says we must take care of the environment. We must cherish it. You know, you cannot say, well, who cares whether we ruin the environment as long as things are going well. So he's not going to deviate from those kind of principles.
Well, you really raise this issue that is very important to consider here when we listen to Pope Francis on whatever subject it is. Generally speaking, how important is it for us, the audience, to realize that when he is articulating a moral theology in these things, whether it be the environment or whether it be property or the tendencies of capitalism, the worst tendencies of capitalism, he's speaking as a moral voice here, not a political voice.
Yes, that's quite true, and that has to be remembered. And then a distinction that fits in with that in Catholic moral theology between principled judgments and what are called prudential judgments. So, we must protect the environment. We have an obligation to do that. There's no question about it. Does that mean, then, that we need absolutely have to cut back on our use of gasoline engines? Well, you might make a good argument for that, but that's hardly a matter of church doctrine. That's a prudential judgment. And it's in that movement from the moral principle to the prudential judgment that a pope could make a mistake. And in the past, sometimes they have. Pope Gregory XVI in the earlier 19th century wouldn't allow gas lights and railroads into the Vatican, Papal States, because he thought they represented something not so much environmental. I think he thought of it as being human beings playing a little bit too much like God. There's always that question of, is the Pope's prudential judgment correct?
We spoke just a moment ago about the encyclical, and it's Laudato Si, or praise be, the one dealing with climate change. Have you had an opportunity to look at either that leaked copy or peruse the newly released document yourself?
What I've seen is summaries of it. I have not seen the entire copy. I think it's been out there, but I haven't had a chance to look at it.
Well, can we talk a little bit about the tendency for the Western press to view the Pope as making political statements when perhaps in his own or maybe it's more his own naivete about how his statements are going to be interpreted politically?
Yes. This is a complicated question. You go back in history, popes and other church leaders have often been involved in politics to one degree or another, and sometimes badly and sometimes for good. So you can't say, we stay out of politics. That's not true. And making moral judgments is not of much use if you can't talk about practical implications. If you say, well, we must love the poor, we must help people, and then how do you do that? Well, that's not my business to tell you how to do it. Then it's kind of useless. So you want to call that politics? Well, okay. Take the Obama health plan, for example, where I think the obvious prevailing teaching among the Catholic hierarchy is we must help the sick. The system we have now isn't really working very well. But on the other hand, there are some serious moral flaws with the Obama health plan, and therefore we cannot support it. You could say that's political. When the bishops say we should have laws outlawing the practice of abortion, people will say, well, that's political. Yes, and it's in a way it is. What you must always avoid is being engaged in partisan politics. That is to say, I always support whatever the Democrats are doing, or I always oppose whatever the Democrats are doing. And that, of course, the church leaders do not do.
So bottom line for our listeners, when they see questions circulating both in media and in social media as to whether or not the Pope is a Marxist or a communist, your considered opinion, looking at the man as you have here and then given his public statements, how would you briefly answer that?
Well, I think it's kind of a silly claim. First of all, in order to even make a halfway plausible accusation, you have to redefine Marxism and communism, leave out the atheism, leave out the materialism, which to Marx's mind and to the communist mind was at the center of it. So if you admit the Pope's not an atheist, the Pope's not a materialist, then how could he be a communist or a Marxist, except in a very compromised way? If you want to say that he's got a fairly left-wing economic philosophy, then I say, yes, that's probably true. In terms of the American political situation right now, you might say his economic philosophy seems to tilt a little bit more towards what we could think of as the Democrats and a little bit away from what we think of as the Republicans. But the idea of communists or Marxists is just absurd.
Dr. James Hitchcock is Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
When we come back on this Thursday afternoon, we're going to open up the Issues Etc. comment line, listen to some of your comments, and respond to them. That comment line, by the way, for anybody who wants to use it, 618-223-8382. We'll be right back.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism, and applying it to the world of today. in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the 2nd century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.